Affairs Department now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio is Lisa Schottel. She is a clinical therapist in Bad Axe here. We're going to be talking about a suicide support group and all the things people who are dealing with this may need to know. And when we're talking about the suicide survivors grief support, we are talking about the people left behind, not people who have survived their suicide attempt, but for the people who are dealing with the grief afterwards. And I want to thank you for being with us.
Hi, Craig. Thank you for having me.
This has got to be one of the hardest things people, families deal with ever.
This is very deep pain for a family to experience, and there's a need for a support group for those affected by suicide. I know when we say the term survivors, you know, sometimes we think that's like attempting suicide and having survived it, but really survivors are those family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, those who are left behind after a suicide. And
those who attempt it usually get professional service afterwards. The families sometimes are wanting, because they're just kind of trying to deal with it on their own, and there can be some comfort in knowing you're not alone.
Exactly. And, you know, oftentimes they feel that, you know, they're stigmatized, and even though they have a really great support group, they feel alone in their anguish. And so, you know, having this type of support group can really help them feel that they're not alone, and it really normalizes sort of what they're going through. If they can count on the support of other people who have, like, walked a mile in their shoes, who've gone through what they've gone through, I call that, like, perfect empathy. You know, they know what that deep pain is. They know the experience. And so to come to a support group where they don't feel judged and really just be able to listen to others that have gone through very, very similar experiences, and whether it's a more recent suicide that the family has suffered, or friends or neighbors, or it's been some years out, it can be beneficial for everybody in the group to participate, and it's such a support group.
Now, we have a local group. When do they meet?
Okay. We just started the group again. I had led this group a couple of years ago, and then we just restarted it myself, and I'm working with, like, the Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition, Kathy Harrison, but we're trying to provide post-suicide support, and where we're holding it is at the Huron County Senior Center. That's the old Davenport University at 150 Nugent Road, and it's on the first Tuesday of the month. So the next meeting would be November 3rd, and it would run from 6 to 7:30.
And do you need to let you know that they're coming, or can you just show up? Because, you know, sometimes you need to know how many are coming, if there's going to be presentations or something,
sure,
enough materials.
Well, and first of all, it takes a lot of courage to come, and people are very brave when they come. They know they need it, but it does take courage the first time to come. And so we do ask that you please, you know, come at least, you know, three times, because it does, it's a difficult subject to talk about, and maybe they haven't even expressed themselves in this way to anybody else prior. But you can just show up, you know, just walk in the door. I have several supplies, and I'm sure we can share. And the more people that come, the better it is for this whole community, for themselves individually, but the better it is also for the whole community to know that this kind of support group is out there.
Is suicide on the rise, or are we hearing about it more? With, you know, we don't report it on the radio unless there's a police, you know, activity associated with it, such as, you know, a standoff or something. But there's social media out there, and this stuff can spread like wildfire.
Yes,
and
it does.
Are we just hearing about it more? Was it more often in the past, you know, the family's secret, the family deals with it, as opposed to being out there for everybody?
Well, definitely social media gets the word out really quickly. In some ways, you know, if it's posted on Facebook or it's posted or put out there in a very public way, it makes it very difficult on the family, because, you know, oftentimes if they go into a store, they go into a restaurant, you know, they just feel that everybody tends to know, and, you know, it makes them a little bit self-conscious. But, you know, what I would say, you know, as far as having it out there, or whether or not there was an increase in number of suicides, we can never really know that, because overdoses or excessive use of alcohol that leads in results in death, or car accidents, drownings, you know, those can all be like suicide attempts, but they have not, they're not put that way, you know, on the death certificate. So we really don't know. As far as increase, I mean, this county, yes, we have especially experienced a lot of suicides, it seems, since April. I don't know if the number's at 6 or 7. We don't know always a precise number.
Now, when people are talking to someone going through the grief, and you're dealing with them face to face, you tend to be kind of, you know, empathetic, and you want to say the right thing. Is social media a whole nother ball of wax? Because people will put on social media things they never say to your face.
Right, and that, and actually, I mean, children are not children, but teenagers, let's say, or even adults are pretty bold about making really dramatic statements, you know, and the problem with that is they don't get feedback.
And they don't always
have the facts. And so, you know, that whole, like, what you tell somebody else and it goes around the room and comes back a different thing. This can spread through hundreds of people in a very quick way. And I just hear so often that survivors of suicide feel like they're people are wanting explanation from them on why did this person do this. And, you know, sort of, because it's such a frightening thing for all of us to consider, if this happened in our own family, they're in the need to know. And emotionally, it's so difficult for that person, maybe, I mean, you know, to go through the details of what happened.
And is it maybe a misnomer on our part that maybe many families never really know why?
Right.
It's a personal thing that the individual did, and you may never really know all the whys, so how can you tell anybody? Or how can you, people want an explanation? You can't give it to them because you don't have one.
Right, and you don't have an explanation, and the person that completed suicide could probably not give you a concrete answer. They know generally that they're in a lot of pain, but it is estimated, and this is from the American Association of Suicidology, it's really estimated that 70% of people who die by suicide are experiencing some type of mental health issue, depression, bipolar. And if those go untreated, it definitely can lead to psychosis or psychotic thoughts or command voices, maybe commanding or telling the person over and over how worthless they are. Like, these are things that I hear, you know, in my clinical experience, that profound sense of not being worthwhile or having value. And so they perceive that they are a burden on others. And it's really not a selfish act. It's really more so they feel oftentimes that if they completed suicide, they would not have, people wouldn't have to worry about them or think about them, or, you know, or if they don't have the resources to obtain some individual counseling. So there's so many factors that are in play that it's absolutely imperative that survivors become aware of, you know, what's going on behind the scene, because they're forever trying to figure out why. And you are never sometimes going to find that missing piece of the puzzle, because that person, you know, in their psychological state just prior to death, that logic is not entering in there. They're not oftentimes thinking about how might this affect all the other people in my life. They're just thinking that I want to end the pain and I will be less of a burden on others.
And in some ways, you know, you don't know, because this just might have been the end trigger, and there were a whole bunch of other factors that built up through time.
That's right.
That this is just what kind of pushed it over the edge. It's like a parent who snaps at a kid, and then they wonder why I snapped at him so bad that time, because it was the build up from all the other times that you kind of bit your tongue and held it in, and that's what they've been doing. And then finally it got to the point where
Right.
They attempted and succeeded.
Right. And yes, it's a straw that broke the camel's back, or what we use the analogy of, you know, your cup gets getting filled in life, and one drop, and okay, I can handle it, and I, you know, all right, this is manageable. But sometimes it's this, that last little drop that makes the cup, you know, flow over. And you know, sometimes people will contemplate suicide for years. Sometimes they will contemplate it, you know, just a couple weeks or so. But, you know, and sometimes it's an act of passion, or it's just an immediate response, and maybe they hadn't really sort of thought about it, but something very traumatic or devastating happened, and they just, they have a mental break, and then they die.
And we often think of teen suicide in that regard, because their emotions are so on their sleeve.
Right.
I mean, they're just learning, they're just making the change from childhood, you know, love and all of that. And then they're going into adulthood, and that can be scary, and mm-hmm. there can be, you know, times when things don't work out right, and you think there's never going to be another. All these things come into play that maybe as an older mm-hmm. adult that they would have thought better of.
Right. And, you know, teenagers are awesome and, you know, intelligent individuals, but, you know, oftentimes, yes, their emotional state, or they're overruled by their emotions, or, you know, they feel like what is happening in their life is forever going to be that way. It's hard for them sometimes to be future focused on that. And so they get really, sort of encased in the pain that they're going through at that time. And it's important to note as well that you know, your brain is not fully developed to age 23, 24, and so
sometimes
maybe you're a little bit impulsive.
Sometimes
there you
60.
Go. Right, like we're always growing, but you know, and so the ability maybe to control your impulses or contemplate a different future for yourself may not be fully developed.
Teenagers, you know, often, you know, go do things because they almost seem like they think they're invulnerable. And
mm-hmm.
maybe that adds to the thing
that's
that
right.
It's never going to change, because it's always going to be this way because I'm
mm-hmm.
always going to be. And they don't realize that things do change as you go through life.
Right. And the risk takers, in the sense of, okay, this will be okay, or I can just do this. But on the other hand, they really get trapped or stuck into the mindset, how is this ever going to get better? And they really don't have the time and experience or new life experiences where they're going to be able to conceptualize that, you know what, I've lived through this before. I know I'll make it through this very difficult time in my life. Because as we go through life, we definitely draw on those experiences in our life that, how was I strengthened before? How was I able to cope before? And teenagers don't always have that, like, well to be able to draw from.
Is this a point where maybe peer pressure isn't working in their favor? Because, you know, you have your peers that you can talk to,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes kids will talk to their peers the stuff they'd never tell their parents, but
right.
you're also wanting to look good to them, and you don't want to show flaws or weakness or anything else, and this can lead to bottling it up.
Absolutely. And, you know, as far as, and, you know, just this is throughout, everybody who does therapy will experience this with adolescents, but they really feel that a magnifying glass is on them, or everything they do is pronounced, or everybody will notice that their hair is parted a different way. You know, and so there's enormous amount of peer pressure to fit into the group or to belong. And I know we all know this through the media, you know, social media, that cyberbullying, or, you know, like being able to text something to hundreds and thousands of people and it keeps going through people's addresses, books, are so devastating. And that's really putting our teenagers at risk for suicide. And I know we've all seen that, you know, in the media and on social media.
You know, we've been talking about teens, and obviously they're a volatile mix to begin
mm-hmm.
with, but it isn't just a teen problem.
No.
This goes on into even latter life.
That's right.
You can lose a spouse, and you're home alone, and you're feeling suicidal because you haven't been alone in 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. and it's devastating.
Mm-hmm. It is absolutely devastating for, you know, people who are newly widowed and, you know, the isolation, the loneliness that they feel, and they themselves don't want to be a burden on other people, but that is a huge adjustment.
Teens who could have another, you know, love down their life, they're mm-hmm. thinking, you know, this mm-hmm. was my love of the life.
That's,
you know,
right.
It's not mm-hmm. something that you can just run out and mm-hmm. replace.
Right. And unfortunately, or what we notice, and I'm sorry I don't have the statistics right out on this, but men over 64 years old have really increased in the number of suicides that are completed, you know, each year in this country. And, you know, maybe that's medical, maybe that's a financial situation, or maybe it is like newly widowed, you know, situation. So we need to take care, you know, we need to make sure our mental health dollars and funding and, you know, are put in, you know, really from the very young to the very old. Sometimes we assume, you know, the elderly are okay and, you know, they're not going to experience such deep despair.
So it's a problem that affects people throughout their life, and it's a problem that affects family members no matter what stage of life they're in, if they're survivors of someone doing a suicide. So everybody is in this picture.
Everybody's affected, and, you know, suicide knows no economic level, you know, no cultural, every culture, every race, every person at a different financial or economic status is affected by suicide. So, and you know, I did want to mention that since 1988, and this is from the American Association of Suicidology, the estimate, and these are always estimates, that 4.9 million survivors, because what they're saying is that every 13 minutes, for somebody that completes suicide, it's every 13 minutes is the average in our country, there's 6 new survivors. So, you know, for this to be sort of hush-hush or to not have this type of support group or not address this actively in a community, that would be such a travesty. At least, like, let's say 5 million people have found themselves in this situation. So it's absolutely imperative to have this type of support group.
Is how we act individually almost as important as how we react as a society?
Well,
we have
sure.
people like, you know, famous people like Robin Williams who commits suicide and
yeah.
that. And, you know, they get all this talk about him. They get, and, you know, it's all positive. And is there a danger in that almost mm-hmm. that it might glorify it a bit, that the end result will meet what they expect it's going to, and it's not?
Right.
That the family is going to be in less pain.
Right. And they can't even really contemplate, like, what would be the absolute result, you know, as far as, you know, Robin Williams goes, or, you know, anybody, as far as the characteristics of somebody, and they're not always typical, but, you know, they complete suicide. Sometimes they are placed on a pedestal, or their own self-expectations of perfection, or other people have expectations of perfection of them. And it's really difficult for them to continually, like, meet the demands. Now, the self-demand that they have is sometimes not logical and it's unreasonable, but this is why it's so imperative, you know, to seek out individual counseling, you know, if you are having suicidal thoughts, because sometimes you just need that objectivity. And oftentimes, I mean, if you're experiencing severe depression, or you have bipolar disorder or another mood disorder, really you have to, like, obtain medical treatment, you know, for that as well. So
is the best therapy at home? I mean, you know, when mm-hmm. you know, parents, you know,
question.
If their teenager
mm-hmm.
Has a friend who
right.
and you don't like the word committed, but performed
mm-hmm.
suicide
mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. You know, is the best way, not necessarily mm-hmm. grief counselors at school, but to know that they can talk to their family about these mm-hmm. issues and get the support that way. It always mm-hmm. seems to me that parents are the strongest factor in any kid's life.
Right. Parents can be pretty influential. However, in our society, really, social media and their peer group are probably going to be more influential on them. You know, as far as, like, getting support at home, you know, oh my goodness, if that is your primary support and you have an awesome open lines of communication with your family. And, you know, I always encourage teenagers, please, you know, go to your parents and tell them you're experiencing this. But oftentimes it is necessary to have individual counseling. I may say exactly the same precise things to that teenager that their parent had said, but it's just totally perceived or taken differently by the adolescent. It's coming from their parent, you know, oh, what do parents know, and all those kinds of things.
But do they need to take an active role in this to ask their kids how they're doing?
Because, absolutely.
Because, you know, a lot of us, you know, we just don't want to, you know, bring it up if we don't have to, because mm-hmm. we all kind of, you know, don't want to, you know, make them cry or anything. You know, there's a nature within us not to upset children.
Right.
And they're already upset. And maybe this is...
And they may be reactive and quick and try to shut you down.
No, I don't know. But if you pursue it enough, then a little bit will come out, and mm-hmm. some of the surface, at least, can be drained off of how it's topping over.
Exactly. Okay. And one of my famous sayings, or what I say all the time, is it's so important to address the elephant in the room. Can't get under it, can't get around it. Like, what is right there that nobody's talking about? Because if it gets shoved under the rug or always goes on to the back burner, that just creates like a sense of anxiousness, like we're not really dealing with the problem. Now, yep, sometimes, you know, it'll appear that your teenager might be unapproachable, but really, it's so imperative to even say straight out to them, are you thinking about killing yourself? Using the words, are you thinking about killing yourselves or yourself? Just to really, really address it in that way. Now, the immediate response, like, nope, I'm not going to do that. But because you open that door, you will be amazed at, okay, maybe I can trust my parents to tell them this, or maybe I can rely on them to make sure that I get help, and this is not going to be, you know, perceived as a sign of weakness on my part.
Because for parents, just sometimes saying it out loud, that we're here for you, you know, and you're genuinely saying it. It's
absolutely
not just, you know, something you read on a card that you, I should say this to my kids once in a while, but it comes from the heart.
Right.
Will mean a lot.
And, of course, you're going to say, are you thinking about killing yourself? If you're seeing some behaviors in them where, you know, you're starting to get concerned, or they're isolating themselves, or there's sleep issues.
Are these two extremes? Because teenagers can do all of those things, and they can be just being
right. So
teenagers.
That is why it's hard to know, right?
That's the trick in parenting, mm-hmm. is you know, they mm-hmm. can be all of these things and just be a teen, because mm-hmm. they're moody and they're isolating themselves, because mm-hmm. they're getting to the point in life where they're trying to create their own life and draw away from you, and you see that as, you know,
that's
being isolated, and there mm-hmm. and there's all kinds of things going on that could be perceived, but is it really dramatic that you're going to know, or do you just have to use your gut feelings?
You know, you really have to use your gut feelings. I mean, obviously, you don't want to be, you know, too over the top with them, because maybe they will pull away if you're nagging them or in their stuff too much, or they think that, you know, you're criticizing or judging them in some way. But really, just
private, not in front of their friends.
Oh yeah, or not getting on the phone and letting Aunt Sue know that so and so is experiencing this way. Like, this has to be a very private, confidential thing in your own home. And but that atmosphere of open communication. Please tell me, you know, I love you. I'm here for you. Please tell me what you're going through. Tell me about your day. Because, you know, teenagers live very separate lives from their parents, and, you know, with sports and just such busy lives and being with their friends, you know, a parent, I don't know if they're engaging in conversation with a teenager, you know, 2-3 minutes a day. So that's, you know, obviously an individual counseling or even a group counseling situation that, you know, we get to the root of it. We talk about those things that, you know, you're just not probably having normal conversation, you know, with your teenager.
And even if you're happy that they're not, mm-hmm. just doing this passes that on to the next generation, because that's how they learn to deal with their kids.
That's
is
right.
To be honest and to keep an open dialogue going, because it's important that they didn't learn from you to shut yourself off and hope for the best.
Right. And so as that moves through generations, like that type of communication style, or that this is how we cope with things, this is how we deal with things in this family, like we actively address it, you know. And teenagers will sometimes, you know, try to shut you out. But if you keep trying to open that door with them, you will end up, you know, with a good end result of that.
Well, I want to get to some of the points you wanted to get to because you have to get back to your helping people.
Okay.
And the group that we have here, what kind of group is it? What are people going to experience? Who are you looking for to come?
Sure. Okay. Again, it would be family, friends, any loved ones, you know, neighbors, coworkers, you know, extending very far out. This is a psychoeducational group, and what we attempt to do is dispel the myths or dispel, you know, what people have in their mind about why, you know, what are some reasons why people die by suicide. So that's really helpful. And that way that it'll reduce stigma, even that the survivors are feeling, so they don't feel they're being judged or isolated or even alone in their struggle to try to cope with these very, very painful emotions. And, you know, It's also designed, the group's designed, well, first of all, it's a very open forum group. Yeah, I'm the driver a little bit, or I might have the steering wheel, but this is really their group, and whatever direction that takes as far as, you know, who wants to talk or how long they want to talk, I mean, you know, I will steer it a little bit, but this is really a group for survivors completely. Now, if you come and you don't want to speak, that's absolutely okay, too. I try to make it educational in the sense of, you know, we are using this book. It's called Dying to Be Free, A Healing Guide for Families After a Suicide, written by Beverly Cobain. But I have so much literature that I try to share with the group. So I try to make it educational in the sense of to help them, you know, understand untreated mental health issues can oftentimes, you know, lead to suicide ideation. But, and I really talk about, you know, like stages of grief, and it's grief that they are going through. And there's different stages of grief that people sort of cycle through. It's not that you go through one stage of grief and then it's complete and you're all done, and you go through all the stages of grief and then there's an end point. You can cycle through that, you know, in your life depending on, you know, if it's a holiday or if it's an anniversary or just a thought that you had that day that reminded you of that person, and it might bring back, you know, all kinds of feelings. So to not deny your grief and to never try to talk somebody out of their grief, you know, to recognize that they really have to walk over the coals and really experience their grief feelings, because if they stuff, it's going to come out eventually, and sometimes like in a negative way or in a way that's going to feel like seemingly out of their control. But the grief stages, you know, I just want to talk about, you know, at first it might be denial, shock, disbelief. And oftentimes people will feel sort of frozen or numb in their first year. It's such a shock for them. And then the second year, there's more of a thawing out period. And the permanency of what they're going through or the permanency of the situation will really hit them. And they'll say, okay, I didn't seem to be this emotional or, you know, having such a difficult time my first year, and now I get to the second year. But the first year, too, you're experiencing so many firsts without that person, you know, in your life. And it's just a very difficult time. You may go through bartering, like, you know, I'll do anything if that person comes back. Anger, you might be angry at yourself or have guilt feelings, so you really need to address those. Depression, people oftentimes go through depression. And then acceptance is accepting sort of the permanency of the situation and really accepting that there may not be a concrete answer here. I may never find that missing piece of the puzzle because, again, you know, as I had said before, sometimes a person that is even having suicidal thoughts or go through a suicide, you know, they're not in their logical mind. They're not logically thinking. And so they couldn't really give you a concrete answer on all the reasons why.
And perhaps if they could have gotten some of this out, they wouldn't have gotten to that point, you know.
That's right.
So they weren't giving you the information you needed.
Yeah, you absolutely are not getting the information. And often, you know, people who die by suicide, yeah, there are warning signs, but they're not going to expose those people so immediately close to them, to some of their warning signs. They will tend to isolate themselves, but we live in such a busy society. You know, you may not know what's going on with that person. You just assume that they're busy. So it's very important, because there's such feelings of guilt that survivors will feel like, why didn't I say this? Or why didn't I help them in this way? Or why didn't I recognize that they were even, you know, going through this very difficult time in their life? And there are not always those. Well, first of all, unless they tell you, you don't really absolutely know, you know, that they're going to do it. But there are some warning signs.
And they may be consciously trying to show you they're in a good mood and they're doing things.
They will present very well. That's right. Yeah.
It's not just that you didn't see it. They may not have been allowing you to see it.
That's exactly it. I would like to just list a few of the warning signs to look for in a person who may be having suicide ideation, but these are not always concrete or clear, and these are not all-inclusive like there are other ones. You know, maybe there's an increased substance, alcohol, or drug use.
Which impairs your ability to make good decisions.
To be rational, yeah, and to make or to consider circumstances or consider options in your life. Oftentimes, you just feel like there's no reason for living. You have no sense of purpose in your life. And that comes directly from, how valued do I feel as a person? And how do I even value myself, or my intense feeling of, you know, lack of self-worth? So anxiety, agitation, like unable to sleep or sleeping all the time, that's another sign. Feeling trapped, and I know I mentioned that before, but feeling trapped, like there's no way out, there's no other, there's no possible way that this can get better, you know, that is huge, the feeling of being trapped. And so really, they just want to stop the pain that they're feeling. Hopelessness, can't envision a future, withdrawal from friends, family, society. Rage is big, uncontrolled rage, that's really huge. Acting reckless or engaging in risky activities, that's another thing. Seemingly without thinking, or without thinking of cost. And then dramatic mood changes. Now, you can have all of these symptoms and not be suicidal. So it's really hard, even as clinicians. I mean, we try to go through different, you know, we try to look at different criteria and stuff to try to assess risk of suicide. You can go through all these symptoms, or maybe you can even just go through one or two. The person that dies by suicide, they often keep it to themselves, and they're not going to point blank just come out and tell you.
Put up a good front.
Yes, yes.
Okay, now if people want to join the support group, how do they do that? Because I know you were getting reminder of our time.
Yep, just to please show up. You can contact myself. I have business cards sort of running around the community, and it just, my business cards say, no cost support group. It's a grief support group for family, friends of those who have died by suicide. And my number is 975-0190. Or you can just show up, and or both. You can just show up at the Senior Center on Tuesday, November 3rd at 6 o'clock. Again, that's the old Davenport University. Kathy Harrison would have a lot of information about this group that she could give you. She's with the Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition. The number's 269-9293. And Craig, what I'd really like to leave you with, for any of those people that are suffering or contemplating suicide, please, there is a crisis number that you can call. It's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and that is 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-TALK, or 1-800-273-8255.
And there is help out there. There are people who are going through what you're going through.
Absolutely.
You don't have to do it alone. There are people who will understand, even if you don't think anyone could ever understand. There are people who have done this and know what you're going through, at least can help you determine all that you're going through. Because I think a lot of times we see such a big problem that we don't even see all the tentacles and aspects that are coming out of it.
That's right.
And you could be pushing yourself away from other family members because you don't want to
Right. And it's so hard to see the forest for the trees or the big picture, or, you know, but you are so consumed in your grief. But there definitely is help out there, and seeking the support of other people who are in your shoes is such a great support for you.
Well, thanks for being with us. Okay. I hope that people are out there and are in need of this, okay, will step up and okay, come to see the group and talk to people, get some of these feelings out, and know that you're not alone.
Okay. And Craig, a huge thanks to you and WLEW to be such a catalyst in getting the word out about the support group. Thank you so much.
Our guest today on the program has been Lisa Schottel. She is a licensed professional counselor, clinical therapist, and is the Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition is working with them on this support group for survivors of suicide, not the people who have survived the actual suicide, but those they left behind who have to deal with the aftermath. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.